Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f- So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hello, welcome to the Balance Podcast. Our guest today, the quite remarkable Jessie May Lee. Jessie's 25 years old. Talk about having the world by the tail. Jessie is the star of the new Netflix mega smash, Shadow and Bone. It is absolutely tearing it up on Netflix right now. It is a fantasy drama. It is being hailed as the new Game of Thrones in the most positive way possible. I mean, I would say that if you were associated with a new show, that is a wonderful tag to be given. It is out now. As you will discover in this episode, I was absolutely blown away by Jessie. It was one of those where I bid an emotional goodbye, went downstairs and just beamed to my wife, like, oh my goodness. This is a wonderful chat, and immediately becomes one of my favourite ever. I know I say that a lot, but immediately becomes one of my favourite ever episodes. And one thing that I discover at the age of 42 is that I don't know about you, but I feel like I'm learning more now about the world than ever before. And to chat with Jessie was such an education, was such an incredible experience. And I learned so much from her. And I guess on a personal level, I just really like to thank her for... I remember interviewing Bross for Balance, and it was Luke Goss, the drummer, talked about bearing your soul and speaking from your soul and... speaking truth. I think about that a lot. He was a remarkable. They were both remarkable. They were both. I didn't intend to talk about my love of Bross, but here we are. But that's what Jessie did. And I'm really grateful that she was just authentic, honest, truthful, informative, educational. And on and on and on. I cannot say enough wonderful things about Jessie May Lee. And as I said at the end of this interview, I would predict, I would put the last tenner in my wallet on this girl going thermonuclear, as a comedian friend of mine says. When someone goes thermonuclear, that means that they're going to become absolutely massive. I mean, to be fair, she's the lead in a huge budget Netflix series mega smash. So she's already doing very well. But you know what I mean? I sense that she's just getting started. So huge thanks to Jessie May Lee. This is an absolute banger. If you share it, you'll be doing us a solid. We are at Balance LDN. I'm at James Gill Comedy. That's across all the socials. Here she is. This is a terrific episode. And as I say to Jessie, there are a couple of points where she couldn't see, but I was crying. There's no two ways about it. Absolutely, I was crying. Fantastic. Thank you, Jessie.
Oh, hey, how are you?
Hello.
Sorry, I had a browser up. I'm so sorry.
No, don't you worry.
What an appalling first impression. Right, I'll be recording. I live in fear of one of these not recording sometimes, so it's just a constant state of anxiety.
Well, it's same on this end, just having to do it.
Oh no,
ridiculous.
Well, look, I mean, this is just straight off the bat, this is dreamland territory, isn't it? The lead in a big budget Netflix series. I mean, this is could you just say a bit about that, because that's incredible.
It's really strange. I feel like it's only really hit home for me recently, which seems weird. Even when we were filming and everything, I think I was too busy just having a good time to really consider, you know, any of the things that you just said. So, you know, it's I'm coming to terms with it now during press and talking to people about it. It is it's something that as a kid I never thought I would be able to do, especially looking like I do. And but you know, times is changing, and yeah, I'm incredibly proud and excited for people to watch the show, really, and for, you know, young people who maybe are mixed race or Asian or whatever, be able to see a character that they can relate to and feel inspired by. I think that's pretty cool.
So I have two very young girls, and so I probably look at the world through a different lens now than when I was a single guy many, many years ago. But when I watch old things now with the two girls, it's almost breathtaking when you and these are things that I take for granted and I hold my hands up. When you watch like an old movie and almost every cast member is male, or the hero is male, and the person that turns out to be the villain is the femme fatale, or, you know, whatever it might be. It is absolutely crazy, isn't it? That's not even that long ago.
No, I know. Revisiting films that, you know, were childhood favourites or things that, you know, I watched as a kid and just think, oh my goodness, what an awful representation of women in this film. You know, this female character doesn't even have any decent lines, or, you know, this film doesn't pass the Bechdel test. And you just think, you know, that's what so many people of my generation, early generations, grew up thinking. And especially now you've got two young girls, you must be thinking like, oh, I don't want you to grow up thinking this is how you have to behave.
My wife and I were having a conversation about the film. I can't remember the bad man or the classic here. We were having a conversation about the film Grease. Now, obviously, when you're a teenager, when I was a teenager, which, all right, again, it's a long, long time ago, it's such an exciting film. But obviously, the message of that movie is, I feel terrible that I've singled out Grease, and there are many worse culprits. But it makes you realise that the messages and the subtext of certain films are jaw dropping.
Yeah, definitely.
When did you notice a change? How recent does it feel to you? You know, someone who's now very much at the vanguard of such positivity.
I feel like there's always been, you know, the issue is, I think the things that were in the mainstream, that are in the cultural, you know, zeitgeist that we actually talk about, were the ones with the poor representation, with the sort of toxic relationships and the, you know, two-dimensional characters. When there always has been, you know, if you go looking for it, or you're someone who, you know, pays attention to the things that go on the sidelines, there's always been like really well-written female characters. But they're just not the ones that everyone talked about, or the ones that were in the magazines or whatever.
Yeah.
And I think it's been interesting, you know, certainly because I feel like in my lifetime, as I've become an adult, you know, it was like as a child, it was, you know, the sort of, like you were saying, the Grease kind of characters. And then throughout my teenage years, that whole feminist wave of strong female, you know, Mary Sue characters, who actually in lots of ways aren't very feminist and are very two-dimensional. So that kind of was throughout my teenage years, you started to see that. And I feel like now we're finally coming into like the adulthood of, you know, this female representation on screen, where you actually are getting realistic female characters, not strong, badass female characters, because that feels old now to me. Like when people say, oh, what's it like playing a badass female character? I'm like, well, she's actually not. She's kind of just a person, and she does her best, but she doesn't start off certainly being badass. And I wouldn't even describe her at the end as being badass. She's just a strong person. And that's what's important to me, I think, is, you know, we've always seen fairly well-rounded male characters who have flaws and, you know, and, you know, and then suddenly, you know, I'm just really glad. I feel like Alina feels like a real person that you could meet, you know, your sister or your friend. And that's really cool, I think.
There was that era, and I'm sure at the time it felt progressive and, you know, right on. But it was that era where there was a spate of these movies where it was the man, and gosh, he had troubles. But it was the term, I can't remember which writer came up with this term, but it was something like the manic pixie girl.
Oh, manic pixie dream girl. Yeah.
Manic pixie. Bless you. So delighted that you helped me out there. Yes. But do you remember? And at the time, that was like this big thing. And then we look back now, I'm whispering, it wasn't that long ago.
No.
your cheeks sort of burn with shame, don't they?
Yeah, it is embarrassing. And I actually have been described in my real life as a manic pixie dream girl. And I'm just like, please never say that. I know you mean that in a good way, but like, it's not really a good thing. But you're so right. And that was fairly recently. And still, things still come out now that have that kind of element to it. So, yeah, it is weird. But I guess, you know, people think that's what people want, because they don't know any different in some ways. But it's that kind of like faux feminism, or like
faux feminism,
you know, that doesn't feel authentic. It feels like it's written by someone who doesn't know what it means to be a woman, and essentially what it means just to be a person, because women are just people. So, you know.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, and it was always, God, if only our troubled three-dimensional man could find that manic pixie dream. Oh, you know what? She's changed his perspective. Thank you, manic pixie. As if that was, you know, her role was just to serve the troubled neurotic man. And then, I mean, also the thing that you mentioned there about the, you know, for a while it was the badass woman. I remember doing a set visit on the film Annihilation. You know, the Natalie Portman, Tessa Thompson movie. Having a chat with the cast there, and it was we're all agreeing it was kind of sad that for a while Ellen Ripley was like the only, you know, we talk about this badass woman, it felt like the best part of 20 years. I mean, you know, I know there's the odd example that will disprove my theory, but generally speaking, I mean, what a travesty for all those amazing female actors who were never given the chance to pursue these proper roles, you know.
Yeah, and like Ripley was written for a man, am I right? I think so.
I did not know that.
Ripley was originally going to be played by a man. And that's why that's such a beloved character, because it's realistic. You know, they didn't have to go, I don't know, change the script to fit Sigourney Weaver. You know, they just said, oh, well, you can do the same thing. And that's true feminism. That's cool. You know, and that's the thing, all of these characters who are well-rounded and realistic, you know, even just things like Sarah Connor in Terminator 2, like, you know, when she's had her sort of glow up prison chin-ups and everything.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
People remember that, because, you know, it's something that actually lots of people can relate to, and it feels like a real person. It's not just, I think we are all exhausted and bored of the same tropes and the same characters coming up all the time. So when there is a character that stands out for having their own life and their own world and their own, you know, weird quirks and idiosyncrasies, we love them. You know, in the same way that we love that in real people when we meet them. You meet some guy down the pub and he's just like such a quirky, you know, he's like the guy that everyone knows who sits outside the pub. We love people like that. We love characters. And I think what I find to be a shame is sometimes I watch things and I feel like they're not characters anymore. They're almost like those melodrama sort of archetypes. And we see them again and again and again played in the same way. And it gets boring. And you can't always put your finger on why you're not enjoying something, but it's because I know what this character's going to do. I know what this character's going to say because I've seen it before. And I think what's nice about, you know, on our show in Shadow and Bone, I feel like lots of the characters behave in ways that are authentic to them and maybe unexpected to the audience. And that's what makes it exciting, because we don't know what's going to happen. So, yeah, I'm happy with that side of things, definitely, especially in terms of the female characters.
And I, what I'm about to say, I sound like I own shares in Netflix, and I transparency. I do. I wish I did. I wish I'd got on board early, but I do not. One of the great things about Netflix, I'm going to drop a name, and I apologize profusely. But I interviewed Patricia Arquette a couple of years ago. She was saying, I'll edit that bit out. I've let my family down by dropping a name there.
Don't worry, I'm not judging you.
Thank you very much. But she, I mean, you've done the same. You know, you when you chat with some people and they offer a different perspective, and it stays with you, and your eyes open, and you think, oh, that person has inspired me to see the world differently. Patricia Arquette was saying that because of this age of streaming and your Netflixes and I don't know why I'm pluralizing that, Netflix, Amazon Prime, Hulu in America, and on and on and on. And the great thing is that we have the quality and the quantity, and it means that there are now roles written for people from all backgrounds, all ages. Now, this feels sexist that this is about to come out of my mouth, but in the 80s, if you were a female actor over the age of, say, 35, I mean, your roles were limited, whereas these days, and Patricia Arquette has got this groaning awards cabinet to prove it, you can be any age and you know, I know I'm not saying things are perfect, but things are certainly better. Any age and any background, and it does feel like things are much more plentiful.
Yeah, definitely. And one thing I always find really weird is that while obviously I understand it from a perspective when it comes to like race and sexuality and things, you know, people talk about TV shows and films having representation and how that will appeal to those groups. You know, and I get that, especially if you've grown up never seeing people who look like you or people who've experienced what you've experienced. So I understand that. But what I never get is when people, you know, you hear conversations, you read things where producers or whoever's been in charge of a film have been concerned that there aren't women in this film or there aren't men in this film. So that if there's no men in the film, the man won't watch it. And it's like, hang on. Okay. 50%. Of the world is female, 50%, you know, whatever, if we're being just very binary about it. But, you know, men have mums and sisters and friends and colleagues and stuff. It's like the way it's talked about sometimes feels like, oh, okay, if there's no man in this film, then men won't understand it. And it's like, well, they will. Or if there's no women in this film, I think, to be honest, mostly because of the nature of the fact that we are all intermixed, and you know, unless you're in a predominantly just male, I don't know, if the film takes place in a male locker room or something, you know, you understand the lack of female representation. But you know, I think it is good that there's a mixture of characters and different genders and whatever, but it is just bizarre that people think that, you know, that we are so different, and we're just not. Like I'm very much, I remember being at school a lot when, you know, and people would often say, oh, you know, boys on this side, girls on this side. And like boys and girls can't really be friends unless they fancy each other. And I just think, especially as like a queer person, I was like, well, that's just like categorically not true. And it's all these things that, you know, if you are someone who, you know, finds it, you do feel influenced a lot by the things that you watch and the things you hear and the opinions you hear from other people, that's how you're going to frame your world, that's how you're going to develop your worldview, is based on these things. And I feel like I was a victim of that. You know, I had quite a sort of conventional upbringing in lots of ways. And I watched a lot of mainstream films and I watched a lot of mainstream TV where these ideas are presented, and read the interviews where people said things like that, you know, oh, well, that we needed to put a woman in the film so women would watch it. And I just thought, after a while, so I think, well, that's just really stupid. That is really stupid. And things like, you know, when Harry Met Sally, you know, men and women can't be friends. That really does exist in people's minds. And, you know, I will have, you know, I've got plenty of like very, very close male friends. And people will say, oh, well, you know, and it's like, well, no, because I'm friends with my brother. I'm friends with my male cousins. I'm not like interested in them. So, you know. And you haven't asked me my sexuality, so for all you know, I could be gay. So, you know, it's just these things do exist. And while I don't think everything should be political, I don't think everything should be making a point. I think there is a certain responsibility from, you know, shows and things, especially shows that have a younger audience, to be able to put forward, you know, realistic ideas and expectations. And I think there should be more of that.
But also in the year 2021, that we, you know, did you see the SNL sketch at the weekend about the lesbian period drama?
No.
Kerry Mulligan is in this sketch, and there's the voiceover, and it's like set in the, you know, 19th century or whatever, and it's nailing all the tropes, and you watch it and you get, you know, and again you're like, oh, this is heartbreakingly true. And then I think I'm ruining the sketch here, and it's, you know, and it's the something like the Oscar nominated stolen glances, and they look at each other, and you know, and there's a scene where they touch hands, and oh, and then the final line is, and there's only one a year, but again, it's true. It's even now a film such as that the films that they're sending up, it's still such a rare event. I mean, I mean, like the fact Brokeback Mountain, for example, when that came out. Which again, it's not that long ago. It's like, oh my god, there's a film where, wait for it, two men find each other attractive, you know, and it's it's again, it's breathtaking, isn't it?
Completely, you know, and despite sort of existing in this like LGBTQ world, I myself, you know, I'm assuming there's playing up Portrait of a Lady on Fire, but I loved that film. I loved, you know, because there's such a deficit when it comes to like period things, especially that have queer relationships. But obviously that's been going on. Yeah. Time began, you know, and especially in terms of, you know, what we love about stories and films and things, we love high stakes situations. So it's bizarre to me that it hasn't been more, you know, kind of period settings that have you know, relationships that weren't going to be accepted at that time. Obviously there are the things, you know, the interracial relationships, that's become more of a thing recently, but certainly anything LGBTQ, we don't hear about it. So you kind of, you know, some people may even believe in some way that it's a fairly new thing that people are doing, you know, oh, all these young people being all gay and stuff. And it's like, well, like, it's always been a thing, but it was something that had to be hidden. So the fact that it was something that was high stakes, and we love stories, we love people coming together, we love forbidden romances, why is it not something we see more? I find that weird. But maybe, you know, things like this SNL sketch will get people thinking about it. I'm gonna watch it straight off.
Yeah, Kerry Mulligan, you know, fair play, because sometimes a host will play it safe, you know, and you hear these stories from the writer's room that the host will say, can't do that, I can't do that. But Kerry Mulligan has clearly just gone, I'm up for whatever. I'm going to blow smoke in your direction. So, you know, strap in. But I mean, your own story is, again, as somebody who's got two young girls, but you're so inspiring, because I find it so, my heart breaks that certain actors and sports stars feel that they can't come out. And again, in the year 2021, and you think that some of the struggles that these people must have gone through, and I get from their point of view, I get why they don't feel safe. Maybe it's online abuse. Maybe they think it'll cost their career. I'm basically just heaping praise on your shoulders here. It's so refreshing that you've done what you've done, as you've just said, you're queer. Does your heart not break that other actors feel that they cannot do that?
Oh, definitely. I mean, I feel very privileged to be in my generation, I think, because, you know, while there are obviously people my age and younger who still very much struggle with being able to be themselves, whatever that may be.
Yeah.
I think that it's a lot more accepted in my age group. I was like in the sweet spot where, you know, there was still a lot of homophobia and things at school. But at the same time, there was like the new wave coming in of people just being like, well, fuck it, who cares? It doesn't involve me. So, you know, whatever. So I feel quite lucky, you know, and I think people from generations that came before you know, there's still so much, you know, in my mum's generation, even my mum has lots of friends who are queer, but even them, you know, they had such a hard time coming out, and some of them still weren't able to talk about these things, you know, well into adulthood. And that's, it seems bizarre to me. And I think, you know, while in lots of ways I'm quite a private person, in other ways, like in terms of, you know, my queerness, or, you know, I've recently found out I'm neurodivergent, I've got ADHD, and race and things like that. I mean, I've always found throughout my life, whether it was, you know, things at school and people talking about relationships or embarrassing stories, I've always found that if I would go into a conversation and say, hey, look, this super embarrassing thing happened to me, quite often that person I'm talking to would have had the same thing happen and feel this like amazing relief. Like, oh, I'm so glad you said that because that happened to me. And oh God. And then you end up having this like bonding experience with this person where you, and that person realizes they don't need to be worried about what they were worrying about. And so I find now, obviously I have social media despite sort of, you know, being a bit unsure about that. But if I can be open about things that other people are struggling with, it might help people just get over it in some ways. If you are prejudiced towards certain things and you see people who are just living their lives and don't really, and you know, I'm not bothering you, you're not bothering me. I think it can give some people the courage to come out or say what it is that they want to say without the fear of having to, you know, say it almost, because it's just like, oh, you know, certainly with me in terms of like coming out to my family, I just sort of kind of like fairly matter of fact statements that I would say sometimes, and oh okay, and that's it. And if you build these things up in your mind, you know, and I, again, I'm lucky that I'm in a fairly like liberal understanding family, and some people are definitely not, but I just think that the more that people are able to talk about who they are, the more we see that everyone is different, and you don't know, it doesn't matter. You know, when people say, oh, this person's just come out as gay, I never, you know, thought that they were gay. It's like, well, you still liked them. You still watched their shows. You still watched their films. Nothing has changed. They've been gay the whole time. You just didn't know about it. So surely it's not that much of a big deal then. Right. You know, that's how I see it anyway.
I don't know if you saw that. You made me cry about three times during this interview, but I had your tears in my eyes during the answer there. If I could have paused you, I'd have like popped outside and had a full.
Oh goodness me!
Oh man, that was honestly, you're about half my age, and you're already my hero. Honestly, that was that was amazing. That was so good. Honestly, Jesus Christ. But because I would say to you, in a very waffly way, what I want to say is, I would say to you, I see you as a trailblazer, whereas I think you would say to me, no, this to me and my generation is normal.
Yeah, definitely. I think that.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Look, I mean, I think this life is so stressful for many people, for many reasons, you know, and I think everything's relative. And I'm very much of the opinion that why should we make things harder for ourselves? You know, I was talking to a friend about this the other day. We were talking about people holding grudges. You know, obviously it depends from situation to situation, but if the wrong has been done and, you know, it's not affecting you terribly, why keep holding on to that? It's only going to make your life difficult if you were to have to see that person. You know, why not just bridge, you know, just say, look, okay, this thing happened between us. I'm sorry, you're sorry. Let's just move on. And if we do have to spend time together, we can do that and we can be civil, or we can be friends. And I think in the same way, I feel like that about lots of things. I feel like we can spend so much time worrying, oh my God, what is that person going to say if I say that? What's that person going to think of me? Oh, someone might be racist. Someone might be homophobic. Someone might not understand, you know, my gender identity, whatever it is. We can sit around and worry about it on top of everything else we've got to worry about, you know, especially in this current climate when, you know, everyone's, well, luckily today, not so much, but, you know, people are locked indoors and there's so much poison in this world. And it's just like, why keep more of that inside you? So I'm always encouraging of people just to be honest, because more often than not, when you then just come out and say something, people don't actually care, or people aren't as affected in the way that you might be anticipating. They're more likely to just be like, no, I kind of knew that, or something, you know? So I just think, why make your life harder? Yes, there's, you are always opening yourself up to criticism or to stupid comments, but you're also opening yourself up to being able to let people in and meet new people. And, you know, let's say you're a young person coming out as being trans and you're really worried about it, but then, you know, you do. And yeah, there's going to be people who don't understand, you know, and hopefully that will start to change. But you're also going to meet loads of other people going through the same thing that you are. You know, that's the one positive of social media. You can meet these people. So, I think I do think if I'm going to be this person, I am going to, you know, have a platform, as it were. I would like to be able to just be myself and hopefully encourage other people, especially younger people, that to be able to do the same and just be like, well, fuck it. I think that's the thing we've all got to just feel sometimes, is like, fuck it, what's the point? I'm just gonna go outside and have fun. Like, that's it.
What you just said there, you've saved every listener thousands of pounds worth of therapy, because that is you know, if therapy is, you know, losing these shackles and just being yourself and living this free life and, you know, dropping so many hang-ups. Is that something have you ever pursued therapy?
Have I had therapy? I have had therapy a few times in the past.
The therapist was paying you.
Yeah, why not? I should get back in contact. No, I think it's, I'm really blessed in my friendships and in my family. You know, my mum is just such this brilliant, strong person. She's so understanding, and I think she raised me and my brother to be very much people who, you know, if someone was acting up or someone's being unkind, we'd be able to think it was probably because they're not happy. That's what happens. People, you know, people sort of hurl their vitriol at others because they've probably had it held at them. And
sure.
And I think growing up with that sort of in mind is just, I don't know, I feel very thankful to have had my mum, because we spent most of my life just having in-depth conversations about things like this. And that's been great for me. You know, like I said, I've had troubles with lots of things, with mental health problems. And I'm now at a point where I just think, I'm just not going to make life even more difficult. In the same way with acting as well, you know, when we're doing our show, you can, and everyone's process is different, but, you know, some people get so worked up. You know, I've met actors who get really, really nervous, and that's completely fine. That's their process. But for me personally, I'd rather just go in, not have any kind of clear ideas of what to do, apart from, you know, a little bit of backstory in my head, and play around until we get there, and then just think, well, okay, that's what happened. That's what we got. That's what we're going to use. If you're happy, I'm happy. So the director, and then just put it out your mind, because otherwise I would probably sit around, you know, I'm someone who hyperfixates on things, and I would probably just sit around and think, oh God, why did I say that line like that? And I just don't have time for that. There's so much other stuff. There's so much washing up to be done all the time, you know?
But I mean, with that attitude, I mean, you're going to be, you're a director's dream, aren't you?
Do you know what? I think because I have a real interest in directing, and, you know, I would love to do that at some point in my life. I feel like, you know, and I think as well with acting, you can sometimes, especially on screen, you can sometimes get lost in the idea that, you know, your performance here, you know, you've got to give it all. You've got to give it all. You've got to show all the emotion. Otherwise, you haven't done a good job. When actually, especially on screen, there's the edit to consider, and there's the score that's going to come swelling in at that point, and there's all these other things that we're not thinking about, but the director is. So more often than not, if you've got a competent director, they've got all this planned out. So I guess I just think, well, you know what you want to see. I might give you some alternatives, but let's do that, because I trust you. And I think that's important, because it's the kind of relationship I'd want if I was directing something, that people would understand, okay, I've got it all in my head, and please give me some options, but this is what I envisage. And I think, again, bearing in mind that we're all cogs turning in something together, and it's not your performance, is, you know, it's like putting makeup on your performance, you know, having the music, having the edit, having sound and things. And so you can, you know, you can have a fairly straight face sometimes and just have the thoughts going, and the audience will know exactly who you're thinking about, because we probably have just cut away from them, or we'll have the leitmotif of that character's music. And, you know, so much of the storytelling is in the edit and in the music. And I think, again, you just got to say, fuck it, I trust you. And then we'll hopefully watch it, and it'll be great. I mean, one day, you know, if I do direct something, I hope that I can have that relationship. Probably end up casting someone who, I don't know, probably tells me how to shoot it. So.
were you familiar with the books before Shadow and Bone?
I'd heard of them, because before becoming an actor, I had dropped out of uni, and I went to, I worked in a secondary school in my hometown as an SEN teacher, so teaching assistant. So lots of my students were in their teens. I was only like 19. I was a teenager as well. But, and they had read the books, and so I knew about them. I knew they were popular because they were sort of after my time. But I hadn't read them. And it wasn't until I just finished my first audition that I started reading them. And yeah, I could just see why people love these books. I don't think I realized how big the fandom was at that point, but I could see why, you know, it was something slightly different and exciting, and it had all these really colorful characters. So yeah, that's when I kind of, it was around, yeah, the audition process that I actually read them.
So I somewhat embarrassed, you know, if, you know, one of the purposes of life is self-betterment, then an area I need to pull my finger out is I really beat myself up here, is fantasy literature. It's just so, I used to consider myself well read, but, you know, now I'm really having doubts. Would you recommend these books? I take it.
I think that the Six of Crows books, they kind of skew a bit more adult. I think the Shadow and Bone story is a more for a younger audience.
What age?
I would say like teenage.
Okay.
And you know, but there's nothing too. Yeah, I mean, there obviously is kind of, you know, relationships and a bit of violence and stuff, but they are. I think they skew a bit younger, and the Six of Crows books are, you know, a bit older. But certainly, and I think it's interesting, especially for people watching the show, to read the books, especially if you enjoyed it, just to sort of see what was different and how it changed, because that was so much of the process was taking this thing and changing it. And something that I, you know, fans of the books will probably be quite excited, because there are little things that are different, and some of the characters are very different. The way they've weaved the two books together is kind of cool. So, you know, fairly easy laid back read. Why not?
I'll be honest with you. I finished, this is self-indulgent at best, but I finished The Remains of the Day a couple of weeks ago. And I loved it. Do you ever read a book and you loved it so much that it's like a relationship and you're not ready to move on to that? That's absolutely happened. I'm not ready to commit to another book. Oh my God. I thought it was absolutely extraordinary. But maybe, you know what? Maybe Jesse, you've thrown me the rope here to move me out. Now, do I take it with this the plan? And again, I sound like your agent saying this, but the hope would be that this can run, can't it, for many more seasons?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, as far as my character is concerned, Alina, she's only in three of the books, so she's in her own sort of trilogy. And obviously the series follows, you know, the Six of Crows stories as well. But, you know, and Lee's continuing to write more books within the same universe. So, yeah, I mean, could very well keep going on. I think one thing that I would be opposed to is the show going on and on and on when the story's ended or when my character's story's ended. I think one thing that often I feel a bit disappointed by is when you're watching a show and it's dead. Just
hey, I'll tell you what, if this wasn't a podcast and it wasn't recording, I would name you a minimum of three shows like that.
Yeah.
Where, again, wife and I on the sofa, you're almost saying it out loud to the television.
You just think, guys, you know, there are some things that were, you know, brilliant the first season. You just think, why just... That story ended, you know, we don't need that anymore. And, you know, because then it just becomes fan service and it becomes cynical in a way that I just don't like. And I will give something a go and just think, the magic's gone. And so I think I would be very keen to, once Alina's done, once her story is done, I'm out there. I will be devastated to have to leave everyone if that's the case. But at the same time, you know, I would hate for Alina to just hang around for no reason.
But also, once your character's done, you want to torch the set so that no one else can carry on.
Yeah. Oh, hang on. What's going on here? Oh. Yeah, exactly. You know, just that's it. No more.
Well, if I'm out, you can't enjoy it either, so.
Yeah, exactly. But
there was one show in particular. I mean, is this a thing that happens? Is it where the writer and the creators, they know that this is a one series thing, and look, neither is a naming a show, and it proves a bigger hit than perhaps the channel were expecting, and the channel go, have another season, and the writer's probably thinking, oh shit. And they sort of grind out this extra season because they couldn't turn down the commission. But all you're doing really is you're then cheapening the first season, aren't you?
Well, yeah, exactly. And I think it's a shame because, you know, especially for someone like me, like I have to really, really want to watch something to sit down and watch it, especially something that's got lots of seasons. You know, I find it, I get bored of things quite quickly in terms of, okay, this is same. All right. Yeah. No, I know. Can you, you know,
so true.
My brain is moving very fast and I need you to stimulate me, not just tell me the same thing.
Get
to the point. So it is a real shame. And like you were saying, I could name many shows where I have been really excited and had great things. And I've sat down to watch something and I love the first season or the first two seasons or something. And then it just gets weird and it gets like, what? Or you end up having characters that meet each other that, like, why? But it's probably because someone on Reddit said that they wanted to see that happen and it's suddenly happening and it doesn't make any sense for the characters. And I think people end up, the characters just end up behaving in ways that they shouldn't do. And that then makes you go, oh, I really like that character. And now I don't, what? You know? So I think, and it's a shame. And again, it just makes me, I love people being creative and being able to like make things happen, make art. But what I don't like is when things are just studios giving people money to make more money, to make money off the merchandise and make money off the actors and stuff. I find that it is cynical and just churning things out that just, you know, no one actually cares about anymore. You know, on our show in Shadow and Bone, everyone cared so much about getting it right and making something cool, making something original. Every single department was so enthusiastic and wanted to tell you all about what they were doing, you know, costume or visual effects, whatever. And that's great. And hopefully going forward, you know, it continues to be like that, because the story will go in an interesting route and we'll go to different countries in this world and we'll go to, you know, meet new people. But I would hate for it just to be like, oh, yeah, well, we can recycle that thing from, you know, that last season. Or we can hark back to, you know, I was reading something about intertextuality in terms of like lots of films at the moment and cinematic universes. And it was really interesting because there's so much of that, like, oh, look, you remember this thing? You liked that, didn't you? And oh, look, here's this prop from 20 years ago, whatever. And yes, it makes you go, ooh, but it's shallow. It's, that's it, really. That you go, ooh, and then you kind of get over it and might as well have just watched the first film, like, or the original film, you know.
And if you're going to do that, what, you know, if you have that feeling of, ooh, I remember, this reminds me of when I was 13, but then the thing actually has to, you know, let's just, and again, I've got to be careful here, but let's just say, remember the pencil from the first one? We're going to do a full spin-off all about the pencil, right? And you go, ooh, oh, I remember how old I was when that film came out. But then you've absolutely got to deliver on the product, haven't you? If you're just going through the motions, then the interest drops off a cliff, doesn't it?
Exactly. And then, you know, you're not your intention of making something, you know, making more money and making more excitement and stuff, it does just fall flat. And then everyone kind of feels disappointed. I think the people watching it and the people making it, and then it's just sort of like, oh, let's just not talk about it anymore, because put it away, because it's embarrassing. And you know, that's not what we want for the you know, the things that we consume. We want to be excited and you know, be invested in something, and when you know what's going to happen, it's just boring. So,
I know you've been stupendously generous with your time. I'm incredibly, for me to weep at just gone 10 a.m. is always a big win. But a friend of mine works in television production, and he says what often happens is someone will say, you know what you should do? You should bring back the Krypton Factor. That was a brilliant show. And what this person always says is, no, it's not necessarily that the show was brilliant. It's because you were 13 years old when that show was on. And what you're actually saying is, I was really happy when I was 13.
Yeah, exactly. I have really fond memories of that time. So everything was really, really good.
and then you give them what they want, and then they watch it and go, oh, yeah, okay, it actually wasn't as good as I remembered. now, I mean, you are someone right now who, I remember David Letterman once used this phrase, you have the world by the tail, right? That's a wonderful, wonderful thing. You've got the world by the tail. Now, is there anything you are allowed to tell us about last night in Soho without, you know, Edgar Wright's representatives swinging through your window?
Through the skylight. Yeah. I think so. I mean, I'm not a huge part in it. I've got a fairly small part. It was really great experience, especially going from that straight into Shadow and Bone. I was able to take a lot of what I kind of learned or what I was able to observe on set. But it's to be honest, it's very original. You know, I remember reading the script and thinking, I've never really, you know, then obviously Edgar Wright, you know, there's music, you know, tracks to sort of almost like listen to while you're reading it. And I was like, cool, this is really unexpected. I wasn't sure where this was going, and now it's here, and it's I think it's really cool. And then obviously having seen, you know, the sort of rudimentary trailer cut together, it's a lot scarier than I thought it was going to be. I was sort of anticipating, you know, it's obviously written, you know, like a horror and a thriller, but seeing it all to come together, especially, you know, my character is essentially one of the classmates of the lead, Thomasin. Oh, she's just absolutely brilliant. Watch it for her alone. I think she's just stunning. Such a brilliant actor. And so I wasn't really party to lots of the horror stuff. There's only a few scenes where those elements were brought in. But yeah, I think it's been really cool. And it's just seeing how, you know, the rhythm and the music is incorporated into scenes. Obviously, having watched Baby Driver, it was really interesting seeing that side of it, because it's not something I was completely unaware of, you know, getting things on beat and stuff. That was really cool. So I think it's going to be great. I can't wait to actually see it, because obviously I haven't seen it. But yeah, I've got high expectations.
So when, you know, what the listener can't see is my brow is furrowed, my jaw's open, because what you just said there. So in the script, so I'm a big Pearl Jam fan. So in the script, would it literally say, Pearl Jam rearview mirror plays while X? Does he actually name the tracks in the script?
Yeah. Well, I hope I'm allowed to say that. Sorry, okay. But yeah, you had, and obviously, you know, lots of it, I'm pretty sure I'm allowed to say this, lots of it takes place in the 60s as well as sort of modern day. So you had lots of 60s music, some of which I didn't know very well, but then you really get an idea of the tone of this scene, and it you know, music does play a really important part to sort of, yeah, set the tone of lots of the scenes. So I always love that. I love it when lots of different elements come together to create something. So yeah, I guess we'll have to wait and see. I think it's coming out in the autumn now. Yeah, it's a long time coming, that one as well.
I have a feeling that the next time we chat, you'll be clutching an Oscar. You know what I mean? That I really feel like there's such a special aura. I don't say this. I don't think I've ever said this to anyone ever. But
you're making me embarrassed.
I'm telling you. Now, before you go, there's a question that I often forget to ask is what's the name of the podcast? And the amount of times I've press stop on the dictaphone or whatever and gone, oh, for God's sake, I didn't ask. What do you do for balance?
What do I do for balance? I think my nature is to be very, I love people and I love socializing and things. But at the same time, I have to almost force myself to spend some time alone a lot of the time. I'm if someone says, hey, do you want to come out and do this? I'll go, oh yeah, I've got loads of things to do, but I do really want to see you. And I follow the fun. But I think ensuring that I do have time just to be by myself, to have that lion, or to, you know, just go for a walk and listen to a podcast or something, you know, and make sure I have that time, because, you know, again, life is so fast and everything is so instant and everything is, you know, instant gratification all the time. And so I like doing things day to day that take time, you know, whether it's cooking a really ridiculously intricate recipe or a meal that takes ages to make, or, you know, taking time, really giving my, you know, my habitat a real like clean or something, you know, doing those sort of slow activities. I think it's so important, because, you know, the world is only getting faster, you know, as all these, you know, the internet speeds are just getting faster. We're all everything, and our time is demanded from us all the time. And I think so when you can, and if you have the opportunity to do so, like, take time for yourself, do something weird that you like doing, whatever that may be, whatever your little hobby is, and make sure you make time for it, because, you know, and spending time in nature is really important. We spend so much time looking at screens. Sure. And I think, you know, being able to just go outside and hear birds singing, if you can, is really, really important for your well-being, because we weren't human beings have evolved, but we haven't evolved, you know, we're not meant to be in the environments that we're in. And I think that's why everyone has so much anxiety and you know, and worrying about having anxiety, like being nervous and anxious is a part of human nature. But then we get so wound up about it, because on the internet, if you hear that you're anxious, then you're ill, and everyone just gets constantly just snowballing out of control. So I think just getting down and meeting your basic human needs, spending time in nature, I think is just something we should all make time for, just so we can just have a bit of peace and quiet. It's so loud sometimes.
Jesse, when I grow up, I want to be more like you. look, huge and heartfelt thanks, and again, I'm looking at the clock, and I apologies for waffling on there, but that was such a privilege, so thank you so much.
It was a really lovely chat. I really enjoyed it.
You too. Oh, bless you. Thank you so much.
All right, well, hopefully we meet again.
Well, yeah, absolutely. And good luck with the show.
Thank you so much.
Congratulations. Amazing.
Oh, thank you.
Bless you. Big thanks.
Take care.
Huge and heartfelt thanks to Jesse and Millie. As I say, Shadow and Bone is out now and was trending very, very high. And I was going to say, I suspect it'll be a huge hit. That is, the horse has bolted. It's already a hit. Across the socials, Jesse is Jesse Maylie. So it is J-E-S-S-I-E-M-E-I-L-I. Tell you what I'll do. I'll hyperlink it. That'll make it easier, won't it? But yeah, you could probably tell. I thought the world of Jesse. I think she's absolutely fantastic. What a talent and what a... Just what an amazing dude in general. Anyway, sorry, I'm beaming like a proud parent. huge and heartfelt thanks to you all. Always really grateful. I hope you know that. I mean that. Take care, and we'll see you again soon. Thank you. Bye bye bye.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.